But what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The United States is expressing growing concern about increased fighting in Syria ahead of Wednesday's scheduled resumption of peace talks in Geneva. Mark Toner is a U.S. spokesman.
We are very, very concerned about the recent increase in violence. That includes actions we believe are in contravention to the cessation of hostilities. And Secretary Kerry, in fact, expressed this concern to Foreign Minister Lavrov and also discussed how to make certain in the next days that every extra effort is made in order to sustain and solidify the cessation of hostilities.
The Syrian army is reportedly sending reinforcements to the northern city Aleppo, where renewed fighting is threatening the truce in place since late February. Meanwhile, UN envoy Stefan de Mistura in Damascus Monday called the proximity talks in Geneva crucially important. UN spokesman Stefan Dujarric Monday said in New York that 3 years after the outbreak of violence in Central African Republic, the biggest killer of children is not bullets, but malnutrition, malaria, respiratory infection, and diarrhea.
The mortality rate of children under five is now above emergency levels in 11 out of the 16 prefectures across the country and in the capital, Bangui, marking a significant increase since pre-crisis level.
The UN said one of every six children in CAR is acutely malnourished. Meanwhile, the new CAR president, Faustin Archange Touadéra, has named his first cabinet, including both political allies and former rivals. Three high-ranking jobs in the 23-member cabinet went to candidates who ran against him in the first round of presidential elections. The new cabinet will also include several members of former President Francois Bozizé's government. This is VOA News. Reaction continues to President Obama's interview on U.S. television Sunday, where he acknowledged the worst mistake of his nearly eight-year presidency was failing to prepare for the aftermath in Libya after the NATO-led intervention toppled dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, leaving that country in chaos. His spokesman Josh Earnest was asked Monday to clarify.
The unique confluence of events, the need for emergent action on the part of the international community, and governing structures that just didn't exist, led to a scenario where the right decision was made at the beginning to prevent significant loss of life, at least in that specific instance. But the rest of the international community did not have time and did not succeed in following through with a plan to compensate for the vacuum that was left behind.
Earnest said the president learned from the mistake in the future use of the military. The president travels to Saudi Arabia next week to discuss with Gulf allies the strategy to confront the Islamic State, which has a growing presence in Libya. Scientists in Brazil have found evidence of a second brain disorder linked to the Zika virus, one with symptoms so similar to multiple sclerosis that some medical personnel have difficulty telling them apart. The new disorder is known by its acronym ADEM, described as a short-term intense immune attack on the central nervous system, targeting the brain and spinal cords. At the White House Monday, public health doctors expressed growing concern about the threat posed by Zika virus. One is Dr. Ann Shukat of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
We have learned that the virus is linked to a broader set of complications in pregnancy, not just the microcephaly, but also prematurity, blind eye problems, and some other conditions. We've also learned that the virus is likely to be a problem at much of the pregnancy period, not just probably the first trimester, but potentially throughout the pregnancy.
Zika has already been linked to the autoimmune disorder Guillain-Barré that causes swelling in the brain and spinal cord. In Somalia, at least five people, including two children, were killed Monday in a car bomb blast outside government offices in the capital, Mogadishu. No immediate claim of responsibility, but the militant group Al-Shabaab is suspected. Meanwhile, two international relief groups are increasing efforts to help residents of drought-stricken northern Somalia. UNICEF and the World Food Program estimate nearly 400,000 people need immediate assistance. Another 1.3 million may slide into the crisis if drought conditions persist. A Taliban suicide bomber Monday struck a bus of army recruits in eastern Afghanistan, killing at least 12, wounding nearly 40. The violence occurred near Jalalabad, capital of Nangarhar province. Markets in Peru higher Monday as a result of the South American country's presidential campaign showed two free market candidates emerging as finalists in the June ballot. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Minister of Education says the government is not privatizing public education.
We are not trying to privatize public education in Liberia. What we are trying to do is to have a partnership with private providers to manage some schools on behalf of the government.
George Warner is Liberia's Minister of Education. Pirates are busy in the Gulf of Guinea attacking maritime vessels. Sudan sentences 22 South Sudanese to death after convicting them on terrorism charges. And a Gambian opposition leader calls for a presidential term limit in the Gambia.
We think it's a good process and that leaders would know that they are not going to stay forever and they will leave after a certain length of time. And therefore, that will make them more democratic, because they will be accountable for what they do.
Lami Wajuwara is leader of the National Democratic Action Movement Party of the Gambia. Zimbabwe's government defends its crackdown on social media, and we'll have a report on an all-female ban that is defying stereotypes in the Ivory Coast. Those stories plus Marco Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Minister of Education, George Warner, says the government is not privatizing the nation's public education system. Rather, it is entering into a public-private partnership education plan. The government has signed a memorandum of understanding with British International Academies, a low-cost nursery and primary private school that uses a technology-based approach to provide standardized education to students in developing countries. But the announcement has sparked a firestorm of criticism from teachers, civil society groups, and even the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Education. Kishori Singh says the proposed venture is a gross violation of the human rights of Liberian children and their education. But Minister Warner says the current performance level of Liberian schools requires drastic action and the government cannot do it alone.
We are not trying to privatize public education in Liberia. What we are trying to do is to have a partnership with private providers to manage some schools on behalf of the government. We are not privatizing. Government will own those schools. Government will oversee those schools. The teachers in those schools will be government teachers paid within the regulations of the civil service.
So why do you think, Mr. Minister, has it become necessary for you to do what you're trying to do, this public-private partnership?
James, look, we do have a problem. Despite our best efforts after the war to restore every institution, we still have major challenges. Education is our biggest institution in Liberia. It is the most challenging institution to reform, and we have come to the conclusion that going forward, the government cannot do it alone. The statistics are grim for us. We do not have sufficient trained and qualified teachers. Our teachers' attendance is poor, and the learning outcome from every student is dismal. So what we are trying to do is to leverage the best of the private sector in terms of management systems and accountability and governance to improve all of these elements that I've just described and accelerate learning outcomes for our children wherever they are. We cannot continue to have our students trapped in schools that are not working for them. We must leverage the best of the private sector to improve our system for better service delivery.
I'm sure you have heard some of the criticism of the change you're trying to bring about, Mr. Minister. I was reading one specific criticism. That's the one made by the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Education, Mr. Singh. He was quoted as describing your initiative as a gross violation of the human rights of Liberian children and their education.
James, there is no one I know who knows the UN system better than my president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. That's the first point. The second point is the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights missed the mark. He prejudged a situation before knowing it in its entirety. he acted on misinformation fed him by teachers' unions and their representatives. Let me be frank. The status quo can no longer hold. People who say that the private sector has no role to play in education today are mistaken. I hope they can change their views.
Minister, some people say, for example, you got your idea from Kenya and Uganda, where this private-public partnership has been tried. The results here in the United States are mixed. I'm talking specifically about the charter schools, which I'm sure you probably are aware of. One big concern is CREME. That is, people think that CREME, for example, the private or charter schools tend to pick and choose which students they can accept and which students they will reject. Are you concerned, particularly in the Liberian situation, that this might happen?
I am not concerned at all, because we oversee these partnership schools. We will regulate them. We will be very involved. Look, James, this is an experiment, small experiment for a big problem, and we have to try. We've tried many things, and they are not working. As I said earlier, our children can no longer wait. The wait is over. Let's try this. It's a pilot. If it works, which I believe it will, fine. The government can scale if it chooses to. But the examples from the U.S., from Kenya, from Uganda are all good. What we are doing in Liberia is unique. In Kenya, Bridge International Academies operates as a private provider. In Uganda, it's probably the same. What we are trying in Liberia is a partnership with the best vetted private providers to deliver management systems that can improve accountability, that can improve governance, and by so doing, accelerate learning outcomes for poor children who are failed currently by the current system we have.
Liberia's Minister of Education, George Moreno, was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A Gambian opposition leader is calling for presidential term limit in the Gambia, where President Yahya Jammeh has been in power for 22 years after a military coup in 1994. Gambians will go to the polls in December this year to elect a new president. Mr. Jammeh has been regularly criticized by international rights groups for his abuse of civil liberties, especially freedom of the press. Lamin Wajuwara is the leader of the National Democratic Action Movement Party. He was Minister for Local Government and Land before being fired by President Jammeh. Juwara says the overwhelming majority of Gambians yearned for political pluralism, where the government in power does not use the state security machinery to maintain power.
I think that there should be term limit. That's becoming a condition in West Africa. And to have rejected that does not go well with most Gambians. So we think that the 2 5-year term limit is really enough for any to stay in power. In fact, they all agreed at the ECOWAS level in West Africa, all the countries except Gambia and Togo.
Do you think that President Yahya Jammeh will entertain your suggestion to bring a constitutional referendum that will limit his term?
Well, he has rejected it, but most people would have preferred for him to have accepted it, because we think it's a good process and that leaders would know that they are not going to stay forever, and they will leave after a certain length of time, and therefore that will make them more democratic, because they will be accountable for what they do if they want to cling onto power forever.
Of course, there are other African leaders, and I'm sure President Yahya Jammeh can make this argument, and that is, why should he want to limit his term when, in fact, the people of the Gambia believe he is doing a very good job?
To say the people of the Gambia think that he is doing a good job, I think that is incorrect. It's totally incorrect. If you live in this country, then you will understand that a lot of people are dissatisfied and that the Dragonian administration does not suit the Gambian people. Gambians generally are a very peaceful people. This is a small country where everybody knows everybody else, and we think that there is no room for a dictatorship in the Gambia. So term limit would have been very good, because he himself criticized the term limit when he staged the coup d'etat and said the first regime has overstayed. They have been here for such a long time. Then to have refused to take a term limit, I think is totally wrong.
This is the feeling, I think, of the overwhelming majority of Gambian people.
Mr. Jawara, you are in the Gambia and you are saying this. Do you think that you may be in danger of being arrested because President Yahya Jammeh may consider this as talking against his government?
Well, this is my feeling. This is what I think. And I am telling you that arrest is not new to me. I have been arrested several times, in prison several times, and a lot of other things. But I will speak my mind. I'll speak the truth no matter what. I have not said anything that would warrant me to be arrested. Even if you, at your level, would feel that what I am saying might lead me to an arrest, then you must admit that what we have here is a dictatorship and not a democracy.
Lamin Wajuwara is the leader of the National Democratic Action Movement Party of the Gambia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Banjul. Today is Tuesday, April 12, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. 22 South Sudanese nationals are facing the death sentence in Khartoum after being convicted on terrorism charges and undermining Sudan's constitutional order. Nabil Biagio has the story for VOA from Khartoum.
The Darfur-based Justice and Equality Movement has fought the Sudanese government since 2003. In 2013, a splinter group called the Justice and Equality Movement, the Dabajo faction, signed a peace agreement with the Sudanese government. Ahmed Abdelmajid is the spokesperson for the Jim Dabajo faction. He says the plight of the 22 South Sudanese nationals happened when his movement handed over the fighters to the Sudanese government for reintegration into Sudan's armed forces.
This case started when we began integration forces. When we handed globe to the government on 2015 to separate the forces, whom they were going to be part of the government and military, and whom they will go out and so on.
Abdelmajid says the responsibility for what is happening to the South Sudanese rebels falls on the shoulders of the leader of the main rebel group, Jibril Ibrahim. Abdelmajid says the Sudanese authorities are also to blame because they decided to charge the South Sudanese instead of repatriating them to South Sudan as part of a general amnesty the government had offered rebel groups, which signed an agreement with Khartoum in 2013.
They took them to trial on September 2015. They faced many of charges, taking arms against the state, undermining constitutional. So this is the cases which they are facing.
Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the South Sudanese nationals on death row are not being discriminated against because of their nationality.
All the rebels, we call them red-handed in action and these things. They've been to court and the sentence according to the legal procedure here in Sudan.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwey agrees with his Sudanese counterpart.
If you are a South Sudanese today and you commit an offense anywhere and you are arrested according to the laws of that country, do I move in to protect you meanwhile you are a criminal because you are a South Sudanese? We only interfere on South Sudanese who are arrested and charged for political reasons.
But Bilal says being convicted is one thing and executing the sentence is another. He says his government is willing to engage with the government of South Sudan in order to find a political settlement to the issue. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
The number of pirate attacks has significantly escalated in the Gulf of Guinea this year, in contrast to what is being termed a remarkable decline in maritime crime elsewhere in the world. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok.
Attacks against oil pipelines and facilities ashore around the Niger Delta escalated in the first 3 months of 2016. And that is deterring major international companies from investing in the region for fear of suffering huge financial and logistical losses, according to a just-released report. Ian Millen is the chief executive officer of the Dryad Maritime Consultancy in London.
It's simple, it's effective, it's profitable, and it's low risk. The pirates there are even doing this in the daylight now, and they operate with almost impunity.
There have been 14 attacks on commercial vessels off Nigeria's rivers and Bayelsa states. However, 8 of the raids were thwarted by crews taking evasive maneuvers. But in the 6 which succeeded, a total of 23 crew members were kidnapped for ransom. According to the Dryad report, European and American seafarers remain the most lucrative kidnap and ransom targets. Millen gives VOA a mixed prognostication for the months ahead for the northernmost part of the tropical Atlantic.
In the Gulf of Guinea, the worrying trend is that we will probably see a lot more kidnap. The good news is that we'll probably see a lot less of product tanker hijack.
Nigeria's Navy has not been very responsive and lacks the effectiveness to confront the pirates, according to analysts. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
The government of Zimbabwe is considering ways of policing internet usage after President Robert Mugabe called for regulating social media to minimize abuse of the World Wide Web. Several people have been arrested for sending or receiving messages or images that are deemed abusive of the president. Minister for Information, Communication and Technology, Supa Madiwanzira, denies the government is planning a total ban on the use of the internet, but he said it will only go after those who abuse the internet.
Well, the government is working on promoting the use of social media by making sure that those who abuse social media are penalized. The government is interested in promoting the use of social media. But the use of social media can be undermined by those who abuse that social media. So the president did express concern over the abuse and not use of social media. So we need to make that very clear. There is no problem with use, there is a problem with abuse.
What about the aspect of Zimbabwe establishing its own kind of applications like Twitter and WhatsApp? Is that on the cards?
No, that is on the cards in every country. I think every country tries to promote an ICT industry in the development of software, gaming applications, and mobile phone applications.
Supa Madiwanzira is Zimbabwe's Minister of Communication and Technology. He spoke with Chris Gandhi of VOA's Zimbabwe program. Dumi Sani Muleya, editor of the Zimbabwe Independent, who says that the government plans to police the internet, is misplaced.
Basically, for us, it's marks of an authoritarian agenda, reminiscent of old-fashioned dictatorship. We do not need government in that space. Government's job should be investing to develop infrastructure, broadband infrastructure, so that we have fast internet. We cannot have a government in this day and age sitting down and coming up with such an idea of trying to control people's access to social media, people's access to information. It's really unprogressive. Besides that, you know, it's really against the Constitution. The Constitution is very clear that people should have freedom and liberty to exchange ideas and information freely. Of course, the derogation is there, but the idea is that the government should be thinking more about facilitating the free flow of ideas and information rather than trying to limit or block access to such.
But Mr. Muleya, we spoke to Minister Madiwanzira. He says that is not true. The government does not intend to ban the social media, but wants to control those who abuse it. What's your take on that?
The citizens themselves, they're able to control them themselves.
That was Dumi Sani Muleya, editor of the Zimbabwe Independent. He spoke to reporter Chris Gandhi of VOA's Zimbabwe program. For nine young female musicians of Ivory Coast, breaking into the male-dominated music industry was not easy, but their group, Bella Mondo, is now a household name in Abidjan and booking shows abroad. Emily Yop reports from Abidjan.
The nine women of Bella Mondo win over yet another audience at this bar in Abidjan. This was the first venue to book them years ago, and they still play here weekly. Bella Mondo is one of the few all-female ensembles in Ivory Coast. It all started back in 2007 when a music producer came to then-music student Prisca Alou. She says the man told her he wanted to create an all-female band to fulfill a promise he made to his late mother. He says she kept telling him he should showcase women making music, not just men. So Alou spread the word she was looking for band members and placed ads in local papers. She says parents resisted the idea. They would say they didn't send their daughter to school to have her go play guitar on the street. Being a musician was frowned upon for girls. She says in Africa, a woman's place is often seen as being either in an office or at home. That was a stereotypical image. Most of the girls Alu managed to recruit weren't professional musicians. The group spent the next 4 years learning to play their instrument. Many gave up, but 8 of them soldiered on with Alu, and the band was born. On nous avait dit, tu quitteras ton père et ta mère. Soon they began performing together, playing covers and original songs. Their musical style is best described as variété. The band doubles in funk, reggae and pop music. Guitar player Clotilde Blé says many didn't believe the band would last.
Au départ, quand le groupe a commencé, il y a beaucoup qui disaient que le groupe n'allait pas faire 2 jours.
People will tell us that women can't make it work, that they can't get along together, she says. So we took that as a challenge. One they have met. In 2013, Belamondo released their first album, and over the years they have performed at galas, official dinners, and on stages in Europe and West Africa. Nodding his head to the music during a live performance in Abidjan is music enthusiast Kader Nanema. He remembers the first time he saw them.
Ah ouais, j'étais surpris.
I was surprised at first, he says. A woman singing, you see that every day. But an entire band with just women playing all the instruments, that was extraordinary. I was dumbstruck, he says.
That's our correspondent Emily Yap reporting from Abidjan. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Egypt has pulled a major surprise by eliminating their hosts Ivory Coast in the qualifiers for the 2016 Africa Women's Cup of Nations in Abidjan on Monday. Ivory Coast, who clinched the bronze medal from the last Nations Cup, prevailed 2-1 in their backyard. However, Egypt won 1-0 in Cairo in the opening leg of their tie to advance on their away goal rule after the two sides tied 2-2 on aggregate. Today, Tuesday, African champions Nigeria hosts Senegal in the return leg in Abuja. Kenya welcome Algeria to Nairobi. Ghana are at home to Tunisia in Accra, and South Africa host Botswana in Johannesburg. Meanwhile, Kenya will pass their anti-doping bill ahead of the deadline of the 2nd of May set by the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. The Kenyan head of state, Uhuru Kenyatta, told the Nairobi media on Monday. The bill has been approved by the National Cabinet. According to the Kenyan constitution, it has to be passed by the National Assembly. Uhuru told the media he is following up the matter with Parliament and looks forward to signing the bill into law before the WADA deadline. Uhuru told the Nairobi media that there are people looking for excuses to ensure Kenya misses the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Uhuru assures they will not give them that excuse. IAAF President Sebastian Coe has threatened to have Kenya banned from the Olympics if the anti-doping law is not signed in time. Elsewhere, Kenyan marathon debutant Amos Kipruto triumphed in 2 hours, 8 minutes and 12 seconds at the Rome Marathon in the Italian capital on Sunday. Ethiopian Bihanu Adisisi and Kenyan Dominic Ruto were second and third. Ethiopian Rama Tusa carried the day in the women's race in a personal best of 2 hours, 28 minutes and 49 seconds. Ethiopian Mulu Duru was second ahead of Algerian Kenza Dahamani, who was placed third. In Austria, Shuko Gemeno clocked 2 hours, 24 minutes and 31 seconds to lead debutant Ruto Aga in a 1-2 Ethiopian triumph in the women's race at the Vienna Marathon on Sunday. Kenyan Doris Chengewa was third. Kenyans dominated the men's race with Robert Chemosin prevailing in 2 hours, 9 minutes and 49 seconds ahead of Charles Cheriot and Suleiman Sim. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that is it for this Tuesday, April 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman and our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barty in Washington saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the sunny side of sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.
voaafrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
All day, all night.